Yeah, technology. Okay.
Hello, 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 mamas, and welcome to another episode of Angel Moms Hopes of Heaven, brought to you by Alana Song. I am your host, Angela Presley, and today I am here to welcome Karen Perry. Karen is a angel mom of three. She has a journey that she has been walking for a while, and she has put it all into book form. She has so many nuggets to give us to help us along the way. So I have been anticipating her interview. So I just want to welcome Karen to the show. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you. So wonderful to have you. Like I said, you are a mom of three angels in heaven. You're an angel mom. And how I start my show is to love on the babies. So
Okay.
all the moms around the globe that's listening, this is how we start. We want to hear all about your babies. So you get started, and we're
Okay.
just gonna give you some love here.
All right.
All right.
Well, to start out, all babies are miracles. They're
Yes.
all miracles, right?
Yeah.
Mine were even more than that to me because I was told at a young age that I would never have kids. I had endometriosis. I had some other issues. So I always wanted a big family, but I was told I could never have kids. So I was pretty heartbroken at that news. And I'd had some pretty significant health issues. I had a something that happened with, that landed me in the hospital for 3 weeks where I almost died. And then I had breast cancer twice, so I thought, you know, I would ne the kids were, it just wasn't going to happen. And I was really sad about that. So I put my heart into my career. At the time, I was a pilot and I was flying a lot and just focusing on that goal. And one day I woke up and I didn't quite feel right.
Yeah.
I was 39 years old, so I was already like, you know, probably wouldn't happen even if it could. And then it did happen. So I found out I was pregnant and I was totally in shock. And my husband was totally in shock. But we were very excited. And 9 months later, I gave birth to a beautiful baby girl that we named Morgan Lee. And so I was, I take it back. I was 38 when I got pregnant. I was 39 when I had her. And then I soon found out why young people have kids
Yeah.
and not older people. You know, the usual sleepless nights and getting up to feed. And it was hard because I, you know, I didn't even have siblings growing up that where I had any experience around kids. I had no experience at all around kids.
Wow.
And so it was a big, big, huge change, and a blessing too. And anyway, Morgan was a blessing. However, she had some health issues of her own. And 6 weeks after she was born, she started having these little seizures, which I knew that they were seizures. I hadn't seen a lot of them, but I just knew that that's what it was. And took her to the emergency room. And none of the doctors believed me. They didn't think that that was what was going on. And sometimes little ones do have seizures, and it's something they just get over it quickly, you know. And anyway, unfortunately for her, it didn't turn out that way. She we went on a series of airlifts and hospitals. And so the first few months of her life were pretty hard. We couldn't get her seizures under control. And sometimes she would have like 45 minute seizures that even in the hospital, they couldn't make it stop. So it was profound. It was dramatic. And it was really, really hard for new parents to have to see their baby like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We went through a lot with that little girl. And she went through a lot.
Yeah.
So after about, I'm trying to think when we finally brought her home. I want to say it was about 4 months of that in different hospitals and transferring her to UCLA across the country. Just trying to find a solution to help her survive.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally found a medicine that got her seizures pretty much under control, which was a good thing. But unfortunately, that same medicine, it stops or it calms down the firing in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So it also affects the ability to learn.
Wow.
And so it slowed her down. It slowed her ability to learn how to do things down. And so everything she learned how to do was a huge big deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the day she put a spoon in her mouth and we were having celebrations.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
because things that most kids just pick up and they just do it. It was a big deal to teach Miss Morgan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were told at one time that she would never walk or talk by this doctor in UCLA who wanted to take half of her brain out, which was seen so drastic. Mm-hmm. And it's called a hemispherectomy, and it's probably the most invasive surgery that you could possibly do to a human being.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do it. I was like, no, we've got to find other solutions, you know? So the beauty in that was that she did all the things they said she would never do. It took her a little longer to do them,
mm-hmm.
but she did walk, she did talk, and she was just an absolutely gorgeous little girl. So a few months after she was born, I found out I was pregnant again. And that was my middle child, Logan, who, oh my gosh, I could write a book just on that kid alone, because he was so precocious. And so the kids were all 19 months apart. So after Logan came Luke, and I bring Luke into the picture now to kind of explain, you know, Luke had autism.
Oh.
Which we found out when he was 12 months old.
Okay.
So Logan was sandwiched in between two special needs kids. And of course, he commanded the attention that he needed and deserved and got in a lot of trouble in the meantime.
Middle child syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was absolutely adorable. Everybody thought he was so cute, and they'd go everywhere we went. He knew people in my town. Everybody knew who he was. And I would say, Logan, how is it that you know so many people? And like, I've been here longer than you.
Huh?
And yet, you know, all these people, everybody knows who you are. And that's because he was so outgoing and friendly and naughty, very, very naughty. But in a kind of a cute way, he was super smart, and I know he knew how to operate like all of our equipment in the house. When he was like 3 years old, he was climbing on, you know, on our audio visual stuff and the TV, and he knew how to do everything. And sometimes I would have to ask him how to make something work. It's embarrassing when you have to ask a three-year-old that.
Yeah.
And he knew how to do it all. And he would, he was very social. So he loved to throw parties. And he one day researched behind my back. I didn't know he did this. He went and researched all of his friends' addresses.
Wow.
And I was kind of wondering why he asked me for stamps. He had made up invitations on the computer for a birthday party, which it wasn't his birthday, but he just wanted an excuse to have a party. And so he printed up all these invitations and mailed them out. And I didn't know anything about it until the RSVPs were coming in from the parents. And I was like, what party?
Look at that.
So yeah, he was a pretty smart little kid.
Yeah.
And then he loved movies. He was, I tried to get him into sports, but he went to play soccer, and in the middle of the game, he picked up the ball and asked the coach, is it time for a snack yet? Like, snack was always, he loved to eat, and he was a couch potato, so he was a pretty chunky little guy, yeah. But it, just so adorable and cute. He loved movies. He would research all the movies that were in town everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was really close to a friend of mine named Eva, who was like a second mom to all my kids. And he called her one day and wanted her to take him to a movie. Mm-hmm. And she had all these things going on that day. And so she was telling him all the reasons she couldn't do it. And when she was done, he said, so now what's the problem? And it just disarmed her so much that she ended up taking him to a movie.
Yeah.
There was another time that I was with him in the grocery store, and we couldn't get by any of, remember those old movie rental things that were in a big box thing, whatever they were called. And we're in the grocery store, and he saw one, and he wanted me to rent him a movie. And I told him, no, we're not renting any movies today. Mm-hmm. And he would not let it go. And so he stood by that movie box, and mm-hmm. I kept shopping, and I would like look to make sure he was okay. I would check around the corner. And the next thing I know, he's talking to some girl, this cute blonde girl in a mini skirt and boots. And he convinces her to rent him a movie. She rented him a movie, a total stranger.
Oh my goodness.
He was just the funniest of funny kids.
Yeah.
He really was. I'll tell you one more story and then I'll move on to the next child. Cause like I said, I could write a book on that kid alone, but, one day when I decided he was old enough to be in the house alone for a little while, I think he was about six or seven at this time. And I needed to get some medicine for my daughter. So I took Morgan and Luke to the store, and I told them before I left, you don't let anyone in the house, no matter what, unless it's somebody that mom knows really well. Mm-hmm. But you don't open the door and let anyone in the house. And he was like, okay, okay. And I said, I'm trusting you with the little responsibility. So he was like, okay. So I had a 15-minute errand, and I ran and got her meds, and we were coming back, and I'm coming down the street, and I was horrified to see he was sitting out on the sidewalk. He had already made a lemonade stand with the little kid furniture. He had a lemonade stand going on with a sign and a pitcher of lemonade and everything. And I was so upset with him. I was just not happy. And so we got him in the house, and I said, what is this all about? You know, I trusted you with this, and you are obviously not ready for this responsibility. Uh-huh. And he always called me mother. He didn't call me mom. He said, mother, you told me not to let anyone in. You did not say I couldn't go out. So, you know, how do you argue with a kid like that?
Yeah. And it sounds like he already had a plan. As soon as I can get time alone, I already got my stuff set up, ready to go.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So just a funny,
Yeah.
delightful kid who kept me on my toes. I always had to stay a step, try to stay a step ahead of him because I thought I'm not going to be able to keep this kid alive very long if he keeps doing some of the things
Yeah.
he's doing. So anyway,
Beautiful story.
wonderful kid. And then little Luke was just the pr most precious, sweetest, just sweetest, sweetest heart, you know, and just a face that was just angelic little sweet face. And as I told you earlier, he was diagnosed with autism when he was 12 months old. And I think the reason we got the diagnosis so soon was with my daughter and all the things that happened with her and her development. I became really keenly aware of milestones and when they were supposed to happen. So if they didn't happen in a certain kind of time frame, my antenna went up as a mother. And I mean, I know some people don't like to maybe even acknowledge when something isn't quite right, but I felt that the sooner you can help them and get them whatever it is that they need to help them catch up, the better off they would be, right? So that's why we had, because I think back then, I don't, maybe it's different now, but back then it was 18 months was kind of when they would do those diagnoses. So we went and had them evaluated again at 18 months, and they confirmed that, you know, they believed that he was autistic. But having said that, he was very high on the spectrum and he was a savant. He was amazingly smart. He taught himself how to read and write when he was 2 years old. And I don't know where he learned it. Like, I have no idea how he learned how to do that. And I was just like shocked. I mean, I was busy a lot with the other two as well. So it wasn't like I was teaching them how to read. I didn't have time for that. But, you know, I was sitting in a waiting room with the kids one day at the doctor's office, and I was busy doing something with them. And this lady taps me on the shoulder and she goes, "Is that your son?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "He just read that whole book out loud." And of course, I was ignoring him because I was busy with
With
the
the
other
other
two
part.
kids. And I said, "Yeah," I said, "I know he does that."
At two.
He was just so he was a savant. And thankfully, he was, I know, I mean, there is a spectrum with autism. So some children, unfortunately, are nonverbal. Some are very withdrawn and won't talk to you or won't look you in the eyes. And, you know, some are just, they have trouble with social situations. They also have trouble with understanding consequences of actions. So there's some challenges there. But Luke, thankfully, he was always very sweet and really outgoing. Like he liked people. And so I was always grateful for that, even though I knew we were probably going to have some challenges with him down the road. I was told that he would probably lead a fairly normal life in the long run. And after seeing some of the behaviors I saw with him, I firmly believe that all of us are on the spectrum somewhere. We're all on the spectrum.
This is true. Yes.
Just some more than others.
Yeah.
And yeah, so their brains are just wired differently than ours. Some of the things that some of his behaviors that were kind of odd was that he was, so he, this reading and writing thing, he taught himself how to do it. Somehow his brain figured out how to do it. And he was also really into numbers, and he would like take number cards and he would stack them in a very specific way. So they have like these repetitive behaviors, right? And, you know, probably all kids do that to an extent, but he was very, and his brother Logan, of course, knowing how important it was for his brother to stack these cards like just in a certain way, would just come and go and throw them everywhere. And then Luke would just freak out and go into a panic, you know. It's like, what did you just do? You messed up my whole thing, you know.
Brothers.
So it was funny. It was funny to watch those two interact. Luke was very much, he loved my phone and my computer, and he was very much into taking photographs of himself and of other things. And I had, and the crazy thing is, the day he died, I was sick in bed and he had hijacked my computer and literally taking thousands of photographs of himself, which I didn't discover until like 3 years after he was gone.
Wow.
So,
wow.
So yeah, that's the other thing that's interesting about the kids, was that they left me a lot of messages in ways that just kind of, it rocked my world. It was like, how do these kids manage to do this and communicate with me after they were gone in this way? Another thing that happened, I got to tell you one more story about Logan that was kind of chilling, actually. A week before I lost them, we were at a stop sign, and he was sitting up in the front seat with me, and he reached over to hold my hand. So I held his hand, and he said, "Mother, if I die next week, does that mean you'll still be my mother?"
Wow.
And I was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, you know, and I said, "Yes, Logan, I'll always be your mother." And I thought about it, and I thought, what an odd thing for an 8-year-old child to say. It was just very, very odd. And then after I lost them to an accident, it kind of made sense to me why he said that. I also believe that they all knew that something was going to happen.
Because I don't want to get into the book just yet, but there's something that I read that one of the babies said, "You won't see me tomorrow," to one of the teachers.
Right.
So, yeah, I firmly believe that the spirit knows.
Yeah, he came and said goodbye to her.
Yeah.
He said, "I want to say goodbye to you."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely with you on that.
Yeah.
There's signs that we just have to listen, look, you know, things that we would usually brush off.
Yeah.
As we look back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You look back and you go, oh, now I understand what that means. At the time, it doesn't really make sense, but it comes together later on.
Yeah. Yeah. As a mom with, you know, we're busy raising the kids, with two that needed your, you know, undivided attention for the most part, was it, take us into like your day, was it like we're getting everybody off to school, or was it like I'm gonna homeschool for a while and then, you know?
It was pure insanity. It was pure and simple insanity.
I love the honesty.
I was so in over my head. Their dad traveled for a living. He was a pilot too. And I took a leave of absence after Morgan was born because, somebody had to be home with these kids. Right. So, it evolved over time, but once, you know, in the beginning when they were all in school, it was so hard. It was so hard because I would be running around in the morning, getting everybody ready, getting everybody dressed, trying to get their teeth brushed, trying to get them fed. And I would do all this. And all of a sudden, one of the kids had completely undressed, you know, after I just spent 20 minutes trying to figure out what we were going to wear and getting them dressed. Now they're racing through the house, naked, one of them, you know.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, the dogs would be throwing a dirty diaper in the air and stuff would be flying all over my floor.
Yeah.
And in the corner of my eye, I would see the school bus going by because it would go by and then it would turn on a cul-de-sac and it would come back. So I had like 45 seconds to figure out how to get the kid dressed again and get him out for the school bus on time. It was really, really hard. And it was crazy, especially when they were younger. It was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have family nearby. So I didn't have any help in the beginning. Because of the kids' disabilities, the state did send someone to my house for so many hours a month to help me out a little bit, just mostly to give me a break.
Yes.
And then they also had special tutoring, and they had like therapies, like physical therapy, speech therapy. I was able to secure those kind of things for the older one, for Morgan and for Luke, and the younger one. That said, our schedules, there was no, like, people talk about, oh, you know, you have to have a consistent schedule. There was no consistent schedule. It was just not possible to have one because of all the different needs the kids had and the different therapies that were scheduled. It just, there was no schedule. So it was really challenging not being able to have, you know, it was challenging with that too for me, because then I had to keep track of a whole bunch of different things that needed to happen. Along with doctor's appointments and the usual things that we all have to do on a regular basis. But it was hard. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And I say this, and I say it tongue in cheek, that I sometimes wonder what was harder, having them here or having them gone.
Mm.
And of course, having them gone is harder, of course. But having him here was pretty hard.
Yeah.
And I love him to pieces. I'm saying that with love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get it. I totally get it. Now, I've heard you mention Pilot a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So pre-children, tell us, I know because I've been reading, but this is, being a pilot was like, mm-hmm. your goal, your dream, this is what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Did that, with the children coming along, how, sometimes we can say, okay, I'm going to go to work when the kids are at school, or I'm going to, you know, inch the kids back in. Did that do anything for you, like mentally or emotionally, not being able to do what you loved, but you're also with another, you know, job that you love.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look back, do you feel like there was like kind of an emotional strain or, you know, tear between the two? Did you miss that flying?
There was, although I will say that I always wanted to be a mother too. So when that happened unexpectedly in the middle of how hard I was pursuing my flying career, I was thrilled to be a mom.
Yes.
And in my mind, and I don't know if things had been different, if I would have gone back, but in my mind, I was always going to go back to it. So it was just something that I had to put on pause for a couple of years until the kids were a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had some things a little more under control in the household. So yeah, I was, you know, you can't always do it all. Mm-hmm. And as moms, we try real hard to do it all. And I know there's a lot of working moms out there, and there's a lot of moms that stay home, which is wonderful. I mean, whatever works for people that makes them happy, and their kids will flourish because of it. And I was happy being a mom, although it disarmed me. I had no idea how hard it was. Mm-hmm. I used to think that stay-at-home moms had such a nice like life of leisure. Oh, you don't have to work. You just stay home with the kids. You just stay home with the kids, right? And it's not just stay home with the kids. Wow. It's hard work. So that was a surprise, but I was happy with being a mom, and I always thought I'll go back to flying when the time is right. Mm-hmm. It'll still be there.
Mm-hmm. And
but you know, my kids are only going to be this age, you know, for so long, and then they won't.
Yeah.
So I used to have to remind myself all the time to just enjoy the moment, to try to stay in the moment, even when it was hard to stay in the moment.
Oh yeah, that's a nugget. That's a nugget. That's important. And now that I look back, there's so many times I wish I just had just enjoyed the moment. But as moms, we're rushing. We got to get here. We got to do this. You got to go to school. You got to go to bed. You got to, you know.
Yep.
But just to stay in the moment and to enjoy the moment. That is very, very important. So with both parents being pilots, mm-hmm. how were the children with flying and planes, and how was that an exciting time for them?
Yeah, they loved airplanes. They we had taken them for rides in little airplanes a couple of times. And then, like I said, their dad would do his trips. He would be gone 3 or 4 days, and then he would come back, and they would be super excited to see him. And, you know, it was kind of like that.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Wonderful. Yeah. So we can get into a little bit of talking into the book.
Okay.
And if we go overboard...
Okay.
You know, I'll just keep it flowing. And if the time runs out, you know, we can just make it a part two as we do.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
All right.
So I've been reading the book,
mm-hmm.
Angels 3, and it has been a page turner. Like I was telling you before, we came into the interview very open,
mm-hmm.
very descriptive, very emotional. There's some things that you say in the book, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way, you know, there's things I haven't even said. And it's been, you know, 8 years since Alana, I like to say, moved to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some things that you express, mm-hmm. and I'm like, there's no way I could have told the world that.
Just
mm-hmm. being descriptive of what, you know, was seen and things like that. And I was just like, wow, you to pull that out into this book, you know, I had to take a couple of breaks and just kind of absorb that, you know, how much it had to take for you to just be an open book,
mm-hmm.
with this. So if we can just start with, you know, where did your strength even come from to say, I gotta write? Or if you want to get into the day first, however you want to lead into this.
There's a lot to the story, and I know, so if I skip over something or miss something, you can remind me, because I've told it so many times, mm-hmm. and I've often said that having a book about your life is like standing naked in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're just there, you're vulnerable, and it's all stuff that's pretty raw. But
mm-hmm.
Well, so I'll start out with what happened and then just kind of move around from there. So, I was divorced to my kid's dad, about 8 months or so before they were in this accident. They were killed in a plane crash, and they were actually on their way to stay with him for the Thanksgiving holiday. And as a pilot, he was an airline pilot, but he also moonlighted for a company that does the aerial firefighting, and they have what they call lead planes, which kind of show the air tankers where to drop the slurry for the fires. And that was a company that had belonged to his father. His father started it in the 1970s. And so the company had been in his family a long time, and his dad had sold the company around the time Morgan was born in 2002. But he still would work for the company once in a while to help him out. So he was moonlighting for this company and quite a bit. And he had moved to a town called Safford, Arizona, which is about 100 miles east of Phoenix, maybe a little more, a 20-minute flight, a long drive, a 4.5 hour drive, 20-minute flight. So the day of the accident, I know he was going back and forth trying to decide if they were going to fly and pick up the kids, I mean, or if they were going to drive. And they decided to use one of the company airplanes to come get the kids, which was fine by me. I mean, they went by plane many times to go visit him after he moved away. And flying myself, I trusted their father completely, with, the responsibility of taking them by air, whatever that meant. So I had no qualms at all about them flying. In fact, I thought it was probably safer than driving, really.
Yeah,
Because I
especially
was like,
20 minutes.
yeah. And I was always worried about them getting in a car accident or something. I always kind of had that fear of like, oh my God, what if, And I didn't have that fear with flying. I always felt it was very, very safe. I still feel it's safe, but that's another story. That's another show. So I got to figure out which way I want to go with this. So the day before Thanksgiving, in 2011, they were getting ready to go visit their dad, and I was sick that day, and I was basically in bed, not feeling well. And so their nanny offered to take the kids to the airport. And we kind of went back and forth. I said, no, I'll take them. And she said, no, I'll take them. And you stay here and rest. And so she took the kids to the airport. And that was kind of I have to back up a little. It was a really weird morning that morning, because that morning I woke up and Logan, the middle child, wouldn't go to school. They were supposed to have a half day because it was the day before Thanksgiving. So their schools were having like a mini Thanksgiving thing at school. He woke up, he was sobbing in his bed. He wouldn't get out of bed. I had to have two friends call and promise him the sun, moon, and stars to get him out of the bed. And so he find because I couldn't, he said he begged me to stay home that day. And I said no, because I didn't want to get that started. Then I'd never get him to go to school. So I said, no, you have to go to school. So the nanny had taken Logan and my daughter to school that day. And then Luke stayed home with me, and that's the run around taking photographs of himself on my computer because I was sick and I was on the couch and I wasn't watching him the way I should have been. So then she, later on that day, picked him up and took him to the airport. And so we had that weird thing with Logan. And then Luke, looked at the nanny after the plane got out there getting ready to leave, and he said, I'm really going to miss you. And that was another child. Like, yeah. Logan had said it to his teacher. Luke had said it to the nanny. And she said, well, I'll be here on Sunday to pick you up. And then he just said, no, I'm really going to miss you. Just like that. And my daughter had a tantrum. This was at night, and she was banging her head on the asphalt at the airport because she didn't want to get on the airplane. And so I found all this out later. Anyway, they took off. It was a dark, moonless night. There was my ex-husband was with the two kids in the back of the airplane, and his business partner was flying the plane, and there was another company person, another young man who was just 21 and supposed to get married the next week, was sitting in the right seat. And they took off, and the pilot was redirected in a flight departure that he was not familiar with. It was unusual that night because there was other traffic coming into the airport. So air traffic control was telling him certain headings to fly that were different than what he was used to. And he basically put a direct course into his GPS to go to Safford. And he was in a different position where he would normally be, that he could go direct without any, we have a lot of terrain out here, a lot of mountains. And normally you could go direct the way he would normally depart and not be worried about the mountains, but they had given him radar vectors north of that spot, and a position north of that spot going direct took him straight over the mountains. And they hit, the flat, it's called the Flatiron region of Superstition Mountain, which, you know, was a terrible event, and it shouldn't have happened. He had enough experience to know better. Let's put it that way. I don't know if he had a lot, but he had enough to know better. There's so many aspects to that. As a pilot, I've studied aircraft accidents my whole life. So I had to know everything about what happened. I had to understand how it could have happened. But I also felt like it was my two loves, the two things I loved more than anything in the world, had collided in a million pieces in a single instant. So, yeah, it was pretty devastating. They didn't know right away. They knew there was a crash up there, but they didn't know right away. And it was a really surreal time. The first time I knew anything was really wrong. I mean, I had gone back to bed because I wasn't feeling well. And they took off at 6:24, and they were airborne for 6 minutes. And I remember waking up about seven thinking I should have had a text from them by now that they were on the ground, because they usually would let me know. And I didn't have anything. So I sent their dad a text that said, are you okay? And I didn't hear anything back. And I thought, well, they're just busy and they're excited because they're there. And then shortly after seven, my nanny called me and she was crying. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, I just saw on the news that an airplane went down. And she said, I think it was the company that owns the plane that I just put your kids on. And so I didn't, you know, I'm pretty analytical about flying. I didn't panic or anything. I felt very calm about it. And I thought, well, maybe their plane went down and they're probably all fine. So I called the owner of the company and I said, I understand one of your aircraft is down. And he said, you mean the sheriff hasn't been there yet? And that's when I knew it was really bad. That was my first clue that it was really bad. And I said, nope, he hasn't. And he was in shock too, because it was his brother that was flying the plane that night. And all of them really young. Sean was 39, my ex-husband. The guy that was flying was 33. And the guy that was in the right seat was 21.
Yeah.
And then my kids were 9, 8, and 6.
Mm.
And anyway, so then people started showing up at my house, which was really bizarre. People that I didn't even know that well.
Yeah.
And I thought that was strange. And so I knew, that it was probably not, it was probably pretty bad. And people started taping up my windows. My front windows didn't have any window coverings on them. So people were taking newspaper and taping my windows up with newspaper. It was just the whole thing was so weird.
Yeah.
And then the sheriff showed up with several other people, like a chaplain and just a whole group of people from the sheriff's department came over to my house, and he couldn't have been nicer and kinder. I just adore that man. He's such a good man. And he just said, we're searching for survivors. We have people up there right now trying to find survivors, but we don't know anything yet. And about, I don't know, 2 hours later, not to be macabre, but this is kind of how it came down, is they found my daughter's hand. They found a hand with nail polish on it, and they decided it was my daughter. She was the only female that would probably be wearing polish on the plane. And so they had found her hand, and so they knew, there wasn't a whole lot left of them because they had just put fuel in the aircraft. And so when it hit the mountain, the aircraft, there was a series of two explosions, and it just basically exploded. So there wasn't a whole lot left of their bodies, which was incredibly, it's hard enough, especially when you're a mom and you're trying to, see the reality with your own eyes. Because when you hear about it, you can't believe it. And I'm sure even when you see it, you can't believe it, but it's really hard when you have no bodies and, all of a sudden your kids are just gone. So, there was, they were able to recover some of their body parts that were, we just had them cremated because that was pretty much all you could do with it. But it was hard to deal with not being able to have a body to look at and for it to really sink in what had happened.
I can't even fathom this. I can't even
Yeah.
fathom this. Does that make it, it's hard for me still to wrap it around my brain to get
Yeah.
closure, to get, how much more difficult not to get your closure because there's, you didn't get to have, the visual, the service,
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here soaking this in.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal because it's like 1 minute they're here, and I thought, gosh, I just said goodbye to them, an hour and a half ago or whatever, and I'm giving them kisses and hugs and saying goodbye, and now I'm being told that they're gone.
Gone.
And so it was just, it was very surreal.
I definitely I get the surreal part. I'm just soaking in, trying to even fathom and not to compare at all, but I'm instantly going back to Kobe Bryant.
Oh yeah.
I'm instantly.
Yes, that was hard for me to hear about. It's hard for me to hear about things like that too, because it hits home. And that was another accident that never should have happened. Yeah. The pilot, I think, got intimidated into, it felt like he had to do it because these people are depending on him, and he got himself into a situation that was above his skill level.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that's what happened. I could be wrong. I didn't read the reports like I have with this accident, but I think that's what happened. And that, yeah, that was just horrible. Horrible accident. But, you know, you asked me earlier how I found the strength to move forward. And I never say move on, because you don't move on from losing your kids. There's no such thing. I really kind of believe there's really no closure either. No matter what you find out, it never makes losing them right. You know, it never fixes it. Having said that, I believe that what kept me moving forward was my faith. But more importantly, was the memory of them kept me forward. And I thought, you know, I want to live my life to make them proud and make them shine. And they don't get to live their life, so I have to live it for them. And, you know, it's really hard as a mom who thought, I'm going to be the one to take care of them.
Yeah.
And really, they're the ones taking care of me. So.
Yes. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. I do understand that. There's days when I'm just like, Alana, I'm going to need some help here. I need you to, you know, I need some strength. I need you to nudge God. Say, hey, my mom. So I definitely get that.
Because you have a voice in heaven now, right?
Exactly. Right. So, man, it's just taking this all in. I just want to get deeper into the story, but I believe my clock is ticking here.
Okay. Right. We can pause it and do another.
And I want to get you some breathing time, because I know it takes a lot to pull this up and to speak on it, even though you've done it so many times.
I have.
Yeah. It still takes a lot. So I'm definitely going to get you back on for a part two of your story.
Okay.
And I just want to thank you again so much for joining me today.
All right.
You are definitely encouraging moms all over the globe. And I just want to encourage you that your babies are cheering for you. Yeah. They're rooting for you.
So.
Yeah. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Angela.
Yep. We're definitely looking forward to part two.
Okay.
You got